Okay, yep, we're recording. Good. The software people, they always have to change things, don't they? We're at MTI 2 Corinthians chapter 8. I can't find my page number. Maybe they changed this too. So I don't know what page it's on.
317 in the book.
Oh, there's the page, new page number. Yes, 317 on the Kindle too. They just moved the page. Jasmine looked at my iPad the other day and she goes, Mama, I can't remember the number, like 18 updates. And she goes, I'm going to update them all. So now everything looks different. I don't know if she did the operating system. It looks the same, so I bet she didn't do that. Is it a pain?
Yeah.
All right, so we're at NTI 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Listen for my words and you shall hear them, for I am always willing to speak to you. You do not hear me when I speak because of your thinking and your thoughts about the meaning of the world. But if you are willing to lay down your own thinking, you will hear me. When you are willing to lay down your own thinking completely, you will hear only me and you will rejoice. Let me tell you what it means to give everything. This is not a statement that can be measured and judged based on actions within the world. For the world is not real. Therefore, you cannot be measured or judged by anything in the world. But you can use the world to measure and judge your own giving. For your belief in the world is the measure and judgment of that which you give. You give through thought. There literally is no other way to give. This is not a partial statement, nor is it symbolic. It is a statement that is whole and completely your truth. You give through thought. You give through thought. There is literally no other way to give. What you give is what is experienced. So your experience is a measure of what you give. One thing I've noticed, I don't know, you know, who these voices are in NTI, but, you know, like, each book had a different voice, except one voice showed up for a few of the books. But this particular voice says literally a lot. I've noticed that in 2 Corinthians. It's the only one. I mean, really, if you go through and look at the way they talk, you can see a difference. And like, this is the only one that like says literally all the time. But literally, what this one is saying.
Seriously,
what this one is saying is, you know, giving money, you know, I mean, not that it's not helpful, because it can certainly be helpful. You know, giving money can be helpful. Giving of your time can be helpful, all of that. But what this is saying is that is not near as important as what's going up on in your mind. This is where your real giving is happening. You are giving to the world through what you're choosing to think. And what it's also saying is you can tell what you're giving by how you feel, because your thoughts are what generate your emotions. So if you're angry all the time, you're giving anger energy into the world. If you're sad all the time, you're giving sadness into the world. If you're afraid all the time, you're giving fear into the world. And this isn't meant as a guilt trip. I know, you know, again, NTI was written for me, so it's perfect for me. And sometimes when other people hear this stuff, they hear it with a slightly different twist that I didn't have in my head when I heard it. What this did for me was this motivated me. Because in my heart, even right this second, I can feel it, and even just before I say it, in my heart, I knew I didn't want to give those things into the world. But I just never had the realization that when I was angry, I was given anger energy. I didn't have the realization that when I was fearful, I was giving fear energy. I didn't have that connection. Before, I thought I was just pissed. You know, I was just angry. I didn't have a connection that somehow that energy was a part of you know, road rage, that energy was a part of war, that energy was a part of husbands beating wives, or maybe occasionally wives beating husbands, you know, or children. And also, as I became aware of it, for some reason, and I don't know why, because I know this doesn't seem to be true for everyone, I realized it without any guilt. It was just an, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. It kind of reminds me of Peace Pilgrim. She talks about she had the same realization, and she says she decided she didn't want to be a part of the problem. And that's kind of what happened for me. I just didn't want to be a part of the problem. So what it did then was it motivated me to become more vigilant, right? And again, it doesn't have that effect on everyone. Some people, you know, they feel guilty about it. And of course, if you're feeling guilty about it, what are you doing? You're putting that out there. It's like the opposite of what this is trying to teach. Exactly. And so it's really saying you can tell what you are giving by how you are feeling, because your thoughts are doing two things. Your thoughts are sending an energy out, and they're sending an energy in. And if you don't want to be giving what you're feeling, if that's not the energy you want to be giving to the world, then you need to become more vigilant about your thoughts. Right? So, starting with sentence 17. When I ask you to give everything, I ask that you give all thought to the true desire of the heart. That is the only way in which you can give. To not give in this way is not to have given, since that which does not exist cannot be given. So again, what Holy Spirit is saying here is, even if we are giving a hate energy or a fear energy or a guilt energy, you know, that's only at the level of experience that has no true effect. You know, the isness that we are is not affected by it. So it has no true effect, so it's not really doing anything. Again, this is why you don't have to feel guilty. If you need a reason why, this is why you don't have to feel guilty. But at the same time, Holy Spirit is recommending that we change our habits so that we spend more time, and this is what this whole 2 Corinthians has been about. We've addressed this in many different ways, but here we go again, that you spend all of your time, or as much of your time as possible, focusing on God. Because when your mind is focused on God, when your heart is focused on God, and you're feeling God, that's the energy you're giving. And that's the message we keep hearing over and over and over again in 2 Corinthians, is spend more time with God. Remember, we've had assignments like, try to spend more time with God this week than you usually do. We've had assignments like, you know, find an inspirational thought in the morning and read it multiple times during the day. You know, the whole moral of this particular book is spend your time with God. In the mind, it means. Because when you spend your time with God, then you're not spending your time with ego. You can't be in both places at once. And again, there are simple techniques that you can practice to help you spend more time with God, like, you know, carrying a thought in your back pocket, or you could use the inner Ramana practice of I am that I am, you know, saying a mantra regularly. Or, you know, one thing that I've been doing a lot this year is I spend a lot of time with my music. I never was a music buff until this year, but this year suddenly I've got this collection of music where every single song is a spiritual message to me. And when I listen to that music, it's like just a constant reminder of every one of those messages and a constant reminder of God. You know, and I listen to the music while I work. I listen to the music in the shower. I listen to the music while I walk the dog. I listen to the music when I'm driving my car alone, usually not with others because I'm talking to them. But, you know, so the more I listen to that music, the more my mind is on God, because that's what the music represents for me. So there's all kinds of ways to do it. But that's what we're being asked to do, is spend less time, you know, focused on our ego, you know, spinning, and just more time with God. Because one is more helpful and more beneficial than the other. Although neither one is truly destructive, because again, the isness is not affected by anything. Right? So Jesus says something about tragic in time. I think he is referring to delay. Delay is tragic in time. I think we could say the same thing here, that You know, it's tragic in time to stay with ego. In reality, it doesn't change anything. But to me, that's just not a... The fact that it doesn't change anything in reality is not a good enough reason for me not to try and let go of ego. I'm going to let go of it anyway. Even if reality isn't affected, I still want to let go of it. Yeah. Verses 8 and 9. I ask you now to focus this lesson on the thoughts in your mind. Do not look at the world and do not look at your brothers to see how well they are learning what I teach. To look at the world is to measure your thought. What you see is your measure, not theirs. So if you look, look in this way. Oops. My Kindle has something here that I can't read. What's the next word after in this way?
To see.
Okay, to see. I think when they put it through the software, every now and then it does something a little funky and they don't go back and check it.
Well, it's got three dots.
Well, yeah, but then I have an F-O and I couldn't figure out what the F-O was. It's a two. It should have been a T-O. Yeah, I was like, what's this F-O here? So if you look, look in this way. See your own thoughts, to see your own thoughts. But I tell you, it is better for you now not to look at all. It is better and more effective if you remain focused within your mind. Someone told me once that when they went into PAL, and it's funny, first let me tell you my experience. When I go into PAL talk, which I don't go into PAL talk a lot, but I do some. And when I go into PAL talk, I hear sincere teachers. You know, you could argue, you know, that there are different levels of clarity, and, you know, you'd have to agree. Some are more clear than others, but they're sincere. Whatever they're speaking about, I can always hear their sincerity, and I just love that. But then another person told me that the reason she doesn't like to go into PAL talk is because every time she goes in there, all she sees are a bunch of fakes. Right? That's what this is saying right here. You're seeing your, how come one of us look at and see only sincerity and one of us look and see only fakes when we're looking at the same thing?
Yeah, the Course talks about that same phenomenon in terms of selective perception.
Yeah, we're looking at the exact same thing and one sees sincerity and one sees fakes. And so what this is saying is when you look, you gotta realize you're looking at your own thoughts. You know, and this is why not everyone agrees on perception, because we're perceiving through the filter of our mind. But then what this is also saying in the same paragraph is, however, chances are you're not really mature enough to remember that. He's saying it in a nice way. But he's saying you're not really mature enough to remember that you're only looking at your own thoughts. So you know what? It's better for a time if you don't look at all. He's really recommending a period of solitude and contemplation and meditation and study in order to mature before being too involved in the world. And this is, you know, I think this is something almost everybody has to go through, if not everybody. Most of us, even though we get this intellectually, the truth is we still fully believe, you know, what we see. And so we, you know, somebody does something and we get upset and something else happens and we get afraid and, you know, we're like jerked around with our perceptions is what's going on. We think we're the victim of the world, but we're not. We're the victim of our perceptions. And we don't really have the maturity to stop and seriously question our perceptions. So on the one hand, we're talking truth, and on the other hand, we're still just, you know, right, being jerked around by our perceptions. So what he's saying is, if you're still at that stage where you get jerked around by your perceptions, it's time to kind of step out of the world as much as possible. And of course, some people may still have to go to work and some people may still have to deal with children. But there are probably involvements that you have with the world that you don't need. This is a stage where lots of people will stop watching the news, for example. You know, you get sitting there watching the news, getting jerked around with the news. You don't have to watch the news. There's something you could give up. So he's really recommending that we notice where we're involved in the world where we don't have to be, and we step out of it and instead use that same time to be more focused on God, to learn more about inquiring into our own thoughts, to learn, you know, to be too mature. And there comes a point, and you'll find it in TI, there comes a point in NTI when he says, now go into the world. The assumption there is now that you're mature. Because the other thing that can happen is to stay in retreat and never come out, you never get to finish the work.
You still think you're afraid of it.
Well, or you think you're at peace, but you're not ever challenged.
Yeah.
You know, so.
There's got to be some lurking fear. If you're not coming out, then there's got to be a reason.
Yeah, there's got to be a time that you got to come back out. And so later in NTI, you're going to find where he says, okay, now go into the world. So this isn't a permanent retreat from the world. This is a temporary retreat from the world to become more mature spiritually. And then when that maturity is there, then you're sent back out into the world to practice, right? Kind of reminds me of something Ram Dass said. It's very famous. I'm sure you guys know it. He said, if you think you're enlightened, go spend time with your parents. Yeah. Danielle.
Related that to something that Ramana did. He had a dog, and there was another dog that came in, and his dog was getting all excited. I don't know
the story. Go ahead.
He said, close your eyes. And he told the dog to close his eyes, and the dog closed his eyes. And because he wasn't mature enough to
be with the other dog, right?
Yeah, he couldn't transcend his biology at that point.
Yeah.
So that's what the advice was, to close his eyes.
Yeah, yeah. And so we have to know within ourselves where we are. You know, if we find we're sitting there watching the news, you know, why all this stuff's going on right now and getting afraid that the stock market's going to have a big crash, or getting mad at the Republicans or mad at the Democrats. And, you know, what the truth is, we could just turn off the TV and go be with God. We should turn off the TV and go be with God. Now, I will tell you, again, from my experience, there does come a point when there's enough maturity that, at least in my case, I actually feel called to watch the news during times of crisis. I almost never watch the news when nothing's going on. You know, there's lots of times when there's nothing going on. But when there's times of crisis, I feel called to sit and watch the news. It's almost as if the universe is saying, you know, we need people who can watch it without getting upset. You know, we need that energy here. So I find that whenever there's something significant going on, I spend more time just sitting there than I normally would. So, you know, that's kind of the other side of this, right? You can be called way back into the world once you have the maturity to be way back into the world, because then that energy is needed. Yes, ma'am. You have something to say?
It just feels really sweet.
Oh. Yeah, I guess it is kind of sweet. Yeah. So again, that's what he's saying. He's saying, if you're going to look at the world, remember that you're seeing your own thought. But it's better for you right now. And of course, he was talking to me on this day. You know, you guys have to decide for yourself. It's better for you right now not to even look at the world. And actually, in North Carolina, you know, during the 4 years I was there, other than when Laurent was there, Laurent was my biggest involvement. But the rest of the time, it was just me sitting alone in the you know, sunroom, studying the course, NTI, you know, whatever I was studying at the time. That really was a time of retreat for me, those 4 years. And a little bit of test with Laurent. Well, okay, big test. All right. So, verses 10 to 12. I ask you to remember who you are when you look at your thoughts. I have told you that you are the one Son of God, without division, living not within the world. Do your thoughts tell you this? Do they tell you that you are holy and one, not separate from anything? Do they tell you that the world does not exist and you do, and so you must not be in the world? Do they tell you that you are with God and God is with you without distance or absence of any kind? If your thoughts do not speak the truth of you, your thoughts are not the thoughts of giving. Now, I don't know about you guys, but my human thoughts never said stuff like that. You know, my human thoughts were, you piece of shit. You fat, ugly bitch. It's true. You know it's true. You mean old mom. You know, you can't do anything right. You know, those were my thoughts. Look how different from this. Right? You know, so this is saying if your thoughts do not speak to you in exactly the same way that I speak to you, they're thoughts of the world. And again, the reason we listen to our thoughts is because we think they're true. We think they're our true thoughts. And so what this is doing is comparing a true thought to what we think. And it becomes incredibly obvious. I mean, I never wake up in the morning, even now. I don't know if I ever will, but I never wake up in the morning and hear, my thoughts are still on the bridge. You know, my thoughts are still, remember to observe. Right? My thoughts are still, let that go. My thoughts are still, you know, listen carefully. You know, my thoughts are still bridge thoughts. I have very consistent, peaceful bridge thoughts. But I do not have thoughts that are telling me the truth about who I am yet. Right? I still have helpful thoughts that are helping me cross over that bridge. So why do we believe, you know, you're a piece of crap when our mind says it? You know, why do we believe you'll never be as good as the others when our mind says it? Why do we believe all that? Why? Can anybody answer me?
Yeah, it's the voice we're used to hearing.
Because it's the voice we're used to hearing, yeah. But does it make sense to believe it?
I think, you know, we're born with it. It's primal. It's indigenous as a belly button.
Indigenous. I would say the reason we believe it is because we never actually question it. We never look at it with reason. We just believe it. It's like blind believing. And so what this is trying to do by comparing it to those other thoughts is it's trying to wake up the part of us that's going to start saying, you know, when you hear, however you hear that, you piece of crap, and you feel crappy for a second, and you go, wait a minute, why am I listening to this? It actually wants to start creating that process in you so that you aren't just running with believing it, right? You're going, wait a minute, why am I listening to this? What benefit is there here, you know? How can this serve me? And if you start questioning these thoughts when they come up in your mind, eventually you won't listen to them anymore because there is no reason to listen to them. Right? They don't make, there's no reason at all. And I can assure you that nobody else on earth thinks you're as low as you do. Nobody. Even the person who, you know, thinks you're a piece of crap. There may be somebody outside of you that thinks you're a piece of crap, but the truth is, they actually think they're lower.
It's probably why they're calling you a piece of crap.
That's why they're calling you a piece of crap. Yeah, the one person who perceives you as the lowest of the lowest of the low, is you. Nobody else perceives you as the lowest because they perceive themselves as the lowest.
Because everybody's with themselves 24/7.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh man.
So instead of king of the hill, it's king of the pit.
Yeah, king of the pit. Yeah, king of the pit.
My girlfriend brought me this book written, I forget the woman's name, but it's called Invisible Illness, Visible God. And she's caretaking her husband who had not been diagnosed for 15 years, that he had Lyme disease, and it really debilitated him so much, and she had so much on her, and she didn't think she was doing it good enough, and she had all these negative thoughts, and so she said her only salvation was to go to scripture and give her a truth talk. So she has lies on one side, and how she answered it with the truth from the Bible, and lies, and throughout the book, and I started to read that. And I tried a lot, which really surprised me. I guess I needed, you know, that. And at the very end, she has an appendix where she has truth and lies and truth, and then one about caretaking and how to take care of yourself kind of thing. But it's exactly what you're saying.
Exactly.
She said that's her only salvation, was to see that those were lies and not to believe them, and to surround it with truth, and then they would die.
And that's exactly what we're talking about. You're right. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. In fact, look at the next sentence, verse 13 to 15. If your thoughts do not speak the truth of you, your thoughts are not the thoughts of giving. I think we already read it, but there it is again. Look then in your own mind. Ask yourself truly how much you are giving. And again, don't forget that this was written for Regina because it motivated Regina. If this creates some kind of guilt in you, then find another question to ask. The point is, start questioning those thoughts, right? Ask yourself truly how much you are giving. You give more by not giving less. You give truly by focusing your mind to give in alignment with the heart. Your true desire will guide your giving, so let your true desire lead in the watching of your mind. Lay down thoughts that are non-giving by seeing them as nothing, or another word would be meaningless, for that is what they are. Pick up the thoughts of giving by knowing the true desire of the heart, for in being true desire, you are giving, and all that you give is received by everyone through one mind in full. So this is really saying, make, I'm going to call it a heartfelt switch. It's funny because, you know, this teaching was so clear to me, but of course it came through me. It was so clear to me that when I first started teaching it to others, I was surprised to see the ways people misunderstood it, you know, because I didn't know that it could be misunderstood. One of the ways that it was misunderstood is that people use this teaching fearfully. So that when they see thoughts coming up that are, you know, thoughts of the ego, but they judge them as bad thoughts. There's always a judgment there. Bad thoughts. And they judge themselves as bad. Then they get afraid, I'm bad, you know. And then they try to hurry up and somehow stuff a spiritual thought on top of that. And that's not what this is intending. This is intending what I would call a heartfelt switch. A heartfelt change of mind, a heartfelt realization, ah, there I go again, thinking thoughts I don't want to think. I'm going to let go of those thoughts because I want to let go of those thoughts. And now I'm going to return my mind to God because I want to. It's all about, this is what I want. It's not about, oh my God, I'm terrible, I better do this. Do you see the difference? Yeah. Yeah.
Quickly.
Yeah. So try to stay in the spirit, because the spirit is actually more intent, is more important than the action itself, right? It has to be, oh, I see what I'm doing. And then whatever, again, for me it was helpful to say I don't want to give this kind of energy to the world. But if that doesn't work for you, then whatever works for you to create an honest change of mind, an honest realization, I just don't want this. You know, just like, I don't want chicken gizzard soup. I'd rather have the chocolate cake, right? Or once you start getting a little too fat, I don't want the chocolate cake. I'd rather have the apple, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's a choice. I don't want this. I want that, you know? And so a gentle change of mind. And that's it, that spirit is what is actually healing. So it's time for an assignment. So is it okay if we just do that this week, that when you notice that your mind is spinning on some energy, or you notice your emotions are on some energy, because that means that your mind is spinning, right? Do what feels honest to you to make a switch away from that and focus your attention on God in whatever way feels honest for you, in whatever way works for you. You know, it's not the mechanics that are important as much as the honest switch.
I remember when I was younger, teenage years, looking into the spiritual books, I was like, I'm reading this, but I will never be a holy roller. That's for damn sure.
So are you a holy roller now?
Think about God 24/7.
That's pretty flaky, isn't it? All right, so I'm going to go ahead and stop the recorder then, and then we'll go into our bit of silence.
The last time we read that,
was it? Oh, I'm pretty consistent.